And welcome back to the program. Chris Moore sitting in for Robert Mangino. We're joined in this hour by Dr. Devra Davis, who's one of the leading environmental researchers or researchers on the environmental causes of cancer. Dr. Davis, welcome back to KDKA. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Thanks for having me back, Chris.
All right. There's a lot of news to talk about today. One of your compatriots, unfortunately, has died. Is that correct?
Yes, it's a very sad day in the world of medicine because we've lost really a heroic figure. At a very young age of 50, Dr. David Servan Schreiber died in France just 2 days ago. And the world has lost a brilliant, brilliant man, and his young children have lost a father. And I've lost a close friend and a wonderful colleague because, in fact, it was Dr. Servan Schreiber who first suggested that we set up Environmental Health Trust, the nonprofit group that he helped to create that has now been providing advice about environmental health hazards and has been focusing on the cell phone issue. For close to two decades, David was known for having saved his own life because he had had a brain tumor. He'd had excellent medical treatment in Pittsburgh with surgery and radiation. But he turned his brilliance to thinking about whether there were nutritional and other things he could do to keep his cancer from returning. And he was diagnosed originally at age 31 and died at age 50. So in some sense, he succeeded far beyond what is normal for brain tumors. But he didn't just succeed on a personal level. Dr. David Servan Schreiber wrote phenomenal blockbuster books that were unusually personal because they talked about what it was like for him as a physician to go through the pains and frustrations and successes as he navigated the very confusing world of cancer treatment.
I imagine that gave him great empathy for the patients he treated.
He was really extraordinary. When you looked at those amazing dark eyes, you knew you were in the presence of greatness and great kindness as well. He went on to be the founder of the Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Pittsburgh. And ultimately, he really took some risks in writing about things like the value of green tea in suppressing cancer cell growth in the laboratory, or the importance of focusing on the immune system as a means of therapy rather than the traditional combative chemotherapy notion. And he did this by writing the best-selling book, one of which, Anti-Cancer, was translated into 40 languages. For me, on a personal note, he joined with Ronald Herbermann, who was the director of the Cancer Institute, and me, and we issued the first international statement warning about the need to take precautions about cell phones. In 2007, shortly after my book, The Secret History of the War on Cancer, was published, and subsequently, he and I worked with officials in France and other countries on this issue. And most recently, in May, the World Health Organization issued a phenomenally important report looking at all of the evidence around the world, experimental evidence, studies in animals, studies in cell cultures, studies in humans. The World Health Organization concluded that cell phone radiation and other forms of wireless radiation should be regarded as a possible cause of cancer in humans.
Now, you say you don't want to alarm people about this because more data needs to be gathered, but there's enough out there that we are at a point where we were maybe in the 30s or 40s in knowing about smoking and its potential to cause cancer, and so that we ought to proceed accordingly. Is that correct?
That is correct, and we have to take simple precautions because what we have is a very, very limited experience with human exposure with cell phones. Many of us are using phones today far more frequently and differently than we did even 5 years ago. The growth in the use of cell phones has been phenomenal. And really, cell phones aren't just phones anymore. They're small computers. They can be used safely in classrooms to teach kids, but not when they're connected to the Internet, to the wireless. We have to be smart about how we use phones. And our website, ehtrust.org, has a lot of very simple information you can follow. Basically, distance is your friend. Use a speakerphone, use a headset, and don't keep the phone directly on your body. That's advice that David Servan Schreiber and I and Ronald Herbermann have been offering to people for years, and now the World Health Organization has issued that advice, and tomorrow the Journal of the National Cancer Institute will have a commentary that confirms that as well.
Now, some new information has come out of a conference in California today about cell phone usage too, right?
Absolutely. Just today, in fact, a few hours ago, the California Board of Supervisors unanimously voted to support the city's right to know about cell phone radiation. They voted unanimously to modify a bill that had been passed the year before, simply requiring that information be made available before you buy a phone that tells you that cell phones are two-way microwave radios that should not be held directly next to the brain or body, and give you in very clear information about what is currently hidden in fine print warnings in packaging. For example, if you go to our website at ehtrust.org and click on cell phone safety, you can find fine print warnings that are in the packaging with cell phones today. But most people throw it away. They don't know, for example, that if you put an iPhone 4 in your pocket, according to the fine print warning, you can exceed the FCC exposure guidelines. Few people know that most phones, in fact, all phones, are not tested in the pocket of the shirt or pants. They're not.
And so putting one in a breast pocket, or a woman putting one in her bra, or something like that, you think could be dangerous long term?
Yes, and I want to stress that's a very important point, Chris. It's the long term we have to be concerned about. And we have to recognize, for example, that women use phones and talk more than men. That's not very surprising. You know, we are from Venus and you are from Mars.
What about young children? I know a lot of teenagers who seem to have them implanted in their ears, and I'm not talking about the Bluetooth devices. They seem to be surgically attached to their ears. And you have another concern about babies and how these devices are used. Tell us about that.
Well, to talk about teenagers for a moment, what we know from research done by some brilliant researchers at the University of Pittsburgh in neurology is that the brain of a teenager is really not fully matured. There's something called myelin, a protective sheath that develops around the neurons in the brain, and that doesn't really fully kick in until the mid-20s, a little bit later for boys and girls. The frontal cortex, which is involved in judgment and empathy and the ability to anticipate the consequences of actions, that's not fully developed in teenagers either. And so here they are exposing their brains to radiation from like microwave ovens in frequency, but 1,000 times less strong in power. Now, here's the deal. Cell phones are very, very weak. They do not have the power to break ionic bonds like X-rays do. So they're not like X-rays. And that has led many people to conclude falsely that therefore they don't have the power to have any damaging effect. The problem with cell phone radiation is not the power of the radiation, but the frequency. And the frequency of a cell phone is like the frequency of a microwave oven. Now, you can boil a cup of water in a microwave oven in about a minute and a half because it has 1,000 watts of power. It's strong enough to move those molecules around. You're holding a cell phone next to your brain for potentially thousands of minutes or hours in a year. And nobody knows what that will mean for the long term, but here's what we do know from research that you can find on our website at ehtrust.org. What we know is that animals in the laboratory that are exposed to cell phone radiation just 2 hours a day develop damage to their DNA, and it doesn't come from X-ray-like activity, but it may come from the pulsed modulation of the signal, the sudden burst and stop. Because cell phones are kind of, think of like you're riding in a car and you're moving along at a steady speed and you might be able to read. But if the car suddenly stops and starts and stops and starts, you're getting that pulsed hit. And that may be why we are seeing laboratory studies find damage from cell phone radiation in cell cultures and in rats' brains that have been exposed to this.
All right, let me interrupt you, Dr. Davis, because I need to take this break, and we'll pick up that thought as we continue, okay?
Thank you so much.
All right, hold on. Our number here is 1-866-391-1020. We're talking to Dr. Deborah Davis. She's the author of The Secret History of the War on Cancer. She's one of the world's foremost authorities on environmental causes of cancer. And we're talking to her about the potential. She's not being an alarmist, I insist on telling you, but the potential long-term danger that cell phones could cause, particularly for young people over the years. All right. We'll take this break and come back with more from Dr. Davis and your calls, too. Dr. Deborah Davis is our guest. She is the author of The Secret History of the War on Cancer. Her website, ehtrust.org, to find out more of what we speak about. Dr. Davis, you wanted to pick up that thought where you were on the cell phones?
Yes, Chris, thanks very much. You had asked me about the impact on babies and children, and I just returned from a conference that the Environmental Health Trust organized with researchers from Gazi University in Ankara, Turkey, as part of the global campaign looking at cell phone safety. And what those researchers presented was stunning new science, some of it published just a few weeks ago, showing that if you take pregnant rabbits and rats and expose them to cell phone radiation for 1 hour a day in the 21 days of gestation pregnancy, what happens is that the offspring that are produced afterwards have fewer brain cells formed compared to those animals that are not exposed and pregnant and produce offspring at the same time. So exposed babies to rats and rabbits have fewer brain cells.
And there is, with all these new devices in terms of the computers, people are using them like baby monitors or baby pacifiers now, putting them under the pillows of newborns. Is that correct?
I'm afraid that's correct, and we think it's a very bad idea, and so does the European Union, and so does the government of Israel and the government of Finland. Baby monitors have been overused in this country. They use the same frequency as a cell phone. If you need to use a baby monitor because you have a very sick child, I suggest you try to get the kind that only turn on when the baby cries and keep the monitor a few feet away from the baby. It's not that hard. But in fact, the American Academy of Pediatrics as well thinks that baby monitors are being overused in circumstances where they're not really needed or as valuable. The same thing goes for things like iPads, which are now being advertised to teach children how to write and read. iPads can be marvelously useful educational tools, but you must disconnect them from the internet, from the wireless, when you give them to a child. And frankly, I think that there's something to be said for paper and pencil, for learning some of the old-fashioned ways that people used to learn. But the broad issue of the idea that you should give an iPad to an elementary school kid is very, very worrisome to me and to scientists and policymakers in countries that are much more tech-savvy, such as Israel and Finland and France, where it's actually against the law in France to sell a cell phone or advertise or design one uniquely for a young child.
Now, again, people are just joining us. I want to emphasize, and you should too, that you're not being alarmist. You're basing this on the data that a lot of people just don't know about yet, right?
That is correct. And in fact, that's one of the dilemmas we have in our wonderful society, is that information about what I'm telling you can be found in fine print in packaging with these devices now. But what makes the San Francisco law that just passed today so important is it says that people have a right to know that these devices emit microwave radiation before they buy them, and they have a right to know about safe ways to use them. And it's not that hard. I'm not telling people to give out their phones. They're not going to do that. But they have to be sensible about how they use them.
Okie dokie. All right, we're going to take another break here. When we return, we will take your calls. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Deborah Davis, then give us a call. Our number is 1-866-391-1020. If you don't want to chat in person, you can always send us a message at the Dollar Bank Instant Access Center, and that's on our website at kdkaradio.com. Again, the number is 1-866-391-1020, and we'll take your questions, calls, and comments about cell phone usage and the dangers they may cause. We'll do that next. Stay with us. KDK Radio News Time, 7:31. Of course, Barbara Boylan just told you that. Dr. Deborah Davis is our guest. Her book, The Secret History of the War on Cancer. You can go to our website at ehtrust.org and find out more about what we're talking about. Anything else before we take some phone calls that you want people to know about?
You can follow us on Twitter at Safer Phones, and you can also find us on Facebook at Environmental Health Trust. I've got young people working with me who are determined to make us get our message out as far as possible.
Is there such a thing as a safer phone?
Well, I don't know. I think they can be made to emit less radiation. We know that that's possible. And we know that some phones are coming out with less radiation. My friends in industry tell me the problem is that they don't want to admit that the newer some of the newer phones have less radiation, because if they do that, they'll be opening the doors to lawsuits because they could have made them lower earlier.
You know that there are a lot of people who are very concerned, and these are doctors, medical doctors in the community, about the things that you say. You write in the Secret History of the War on Cancer that you risk your own personal career. Others have risked their own personal career by challenging the status quo. Are you at all concerned about that and the warnings that you are given? Because I've interviewed other doctors who sort of poo-poo your research.
Well, the ones who poo-poo my research haven't actually read it. There's never been a written critique of any of my scientific articles on this subject, the most recent one of which appeared a month ago and analyzes the estimated exposure in the brain of a 10-year-old, a 5-year-old, and an adult using state-of-the-art models. That paper still stands and has been peer-reviewed, and what that paper showed, and there's never been any dispute of it because we used industry data to do this, what we showed in that paper is that a child on average will absorb twice as much microwave radiation into their brain as will an adult, and that most adults
absorb. Is that because their skulls are not developed fully?
You got it. Their skulls are thinner, their brains contain more fluid, therefore they'll absorb more microwave radiation. And that, by the way, that the criticisms have not been leveled now that the World Health Organization has spoken. In The Lancet Oncology, in July 1st, a consensus statement of the World Health Organization appeared, which says that human exposure to radio frequency radiation, such as I've talked about in my popular book, Disconnect, can be a cause of cancer for humans, like engine exhausts and pesticides and some rare pickled vegetables that are consumed in China. And that study talks about the fact that epidemiology, that is the study of how cell phones affect people, has been very limited in its capacity to study the problem because of one simple thing. Brain cancers, we think, take about 10 years to form after regular use begins for an exposure, for example, to X-rays, which we know can cause cancer of the brain. If it takes 10 years, most of the studies ever published on cell phones and brain tumors have looked at people who've used a cell phone for 2 to 5 years. So, of course, they find nothing. Or there's a study that's going to be coming out soon that looks at children aged 7 to 19 and looks at the ones who have brain cancer compared to those who don't and sees whether or not they've been using a cell phone more. Well, a 7-year-old hasn't even been alive long enough to use a cell phone. And most children in the Norwegian, Swedish, and Danish countries for which the study comes have not even owned a cell phone. So we need to be very careful when we're talking about this. The science of human studies remains complicated and confusing, but the science of what happens to cell cultures in laboratories or what happens to pregnant rabbits or pregnant rats under many different circumstances in many different laboratories is, I think, really compelling. And the United States of America today has a paltry amount of scientific research underway on this subject and no routine large-scale monitoring at all for the impact of cell phone radiation on our children.
All right. Are you ready to take some phone calls?
I certainly am.
Let's go to Castle Shannon and Chris. Chris, you're on KDK with Dr. Devra Davis.
Good evening to you, Chris, and Dr. Davis.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, before I start, Chris, congratulations and commendations to you for bringing such outstanding guests to your audience.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Dr. Davis, first off, condolences on the loss of your colleague. And
thank you.
On the wider topic of the electromagnetic smog that seems to characterize our modern-day technology, does your work show anything, or do you have any comment with regard to the millimeter wave scanners that are currently in use at airports, and reports, or at least anecdotal reports, concerning increased incidence of cancer in TSA agents who are more prone to be exposed to these things, too?
Well, I very much appreciate your comments, and I'm afraid that the answer to your question is I don't know.
Okay.
And that's unfortunately the case. What I can tell you is this. You're absolutely right that we are now in a sea of radio frequency radiation. But the only radio frequency device that we put directly next to our brain or body is a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
The world would look very different if we suddenly had none of these devices.
Yeah.
They have generally revolutionized our ability to conduct business, to respond to emergencies, to do a lot of things. Now, with respect to airport scanners, a group of scientists from the University of California, San Francisco, raised the issue that the scanners are being used by people who are not very sophisticated, and that if they malfunction, they could issue a very high dose.
Mm-hmm.
Many other nations are providing airport security without doing this kind of scanning. And I think we need to look very carefully at what those other countries are doing before embracing this technology so wholeheartedly. Now, with respect to the TSA workers, it is extremely unlikely that any increase in cancer could be showing up in them associated with these scanners at this time. Cancer is a complicated disease. It usually, not always, usually has a latency of 5 to 10 years. There are some reports coming out of Israeli observations of radar operators of shorter latencies, people who are developing cancers of the testicles within a few years of using high-exposure radar guns.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, unfortunately, while you're correct that we are exposed to a sea of radiofrequency radiation, there is no evidence at this time in human studies of harm. My point, however, is, wait a minute, why should we wait for human evidence? I mean, if we really are going to say that we want to wait for proof of human harm before trying to prevent more harm, what does that mean we're doing to our children?
We're just using ourselves as guinea pigs then, rather than the real studies.
I think that's well said, and that's why I've written the book Disconnect, and that's why I've founded this nonprofit, Environmental Health Trust, and you can follow us on Twitter at Safer Phone Zone, our website, saferphonezone.com, or follow us at Safer Phones on Twitter. And we're really trying to get the message out to young people. I'm even working with a DJ, Steve Aoki, who's helping to get the word out.
Well, thank you very much for your comments. I do appreciate your insights. And Chris, thank you, too.
All right, thank you. Let's continue. Anya Nag in Homewood, you're on KDK.
Yeah, what's up, Chris?
How you
Dr.
doing?
Dr. Davis, how you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Hey, Dr. Davis, I'm in total agreement with you about the radiation being very similar to microwave oven. Now, we know that a microwave oven, it works by exciting the molecules of the biological and causing them to heat up. Now, is that the same way that is working in the brain, in the air? Because, you know,
well,
some of the earlier cell phones, they were hot when they when you used them for a while, the earlier cell phones.
Well, actually, cell phones are set not to heat the brain. So they don't work by heating it. In fact, the interesting thing about the brain itself is the brain has no way to sense heat or pain. Now, you certainly feel pain through if somebody drills a hole in your skull, as they have to do brain surgery. But the brain itself does not feel heat or pain. So the heat effect that you felt from a cell phone often was just from pressing it so close next to your head. And we're concerned here about levels of microwave radiation that are incapable of generating heat, but still may be causing damage because they're pulsed. As one example, if you're riding in a car and you have your cell phone on and you do not have Bluetooth in the car, here's what's happening. As you're moving from one cell signal to another antenna, you get a burst of energy in that phone. And when you have that phone next to your body, right next to your head, you're getting zapped with a higher amount just for a few seconds. And as
of radiation,
out,
right?
Yes. And just for
okay, wait a minute. Let me stop you right there for a second. Sorry, but doesn't radiation heat up the brain? I mean, does the radiation?
This kind of radiation is non-ionizing, and standards are set so that it does not heat up the brain. You're not getting cooked, but you are getting your molecules are getting disrupted. The membranes are getting weakened.
Yeah, the molecules are being excited, right?
Exactly.
Okay,
yes.
That was my point. That was now the question. Next question: what is the effect of the frequency? Like the man that called earlier, we live in a sea of electromagnetic frequencies, and what is the effect of these frequencies have on, say, the environment, like the weather? You have a lot of as you said, there's millions and millions of cell phones in use.
Yes. We do not have answers to a lot of these questions. That's why I wrote my book, Disconnect. That's why I'm calling for $1 a phone fee to create a massive amount of independent funding for research, because most of the studies in this field have been sponsored by industry, and not surprisingly, most of them have found nothing. This is too important an issue for us to continue to hope and assume that those industry-sponsored studies are correct, and we have some good reasons to think that they're not. We need to answer your question. You're asking good questions, and I'm sorry to say that I don't have the answers. But the fact that we're having this discussion with Chris on his program today is a really important thing. We have to recognize we are in love with this technology, all of us, including me. But we need to be smarter about how we use it and ask these kinds of intelligent questions. Otherwise, we are going to be treating our children like experimental subjects.
All right, Ananak, I'm going to have to let you go. I'm pressed for time.
One last question, Chris.
Quickly.
One last question. Now, Dr. Davis, I talked to you before and I asked you about dials, and you told me that I hung up the last time. You said that dials had no effect. But there are scientists in the dial field that would disagree with you. There are all kind of dials. I actually have seen them work where they have measured, they have neutralized the measurement of radiation. Just give me an answer on that, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. You know, I appreciate that there are many people out there who believe that there are devices that work to neutralize cell phone radiation. I have not ever seen any independent scientific evidence that they work. That doesn't mean they don't. I know there are scientists who work for the companies that sell these devices who say they work, but I personally haven't seen any independent science on it. And I'm very interested to see if such a thing exists. But the people that I trust on this field who have looked at these things agree with me that so far as we know, there's no evidence that they are effective, although I know many people would like to believe that they are. Again, neither the industry that makes these so-called protected devices nor the industry that develops the phone ought to be involved in studying themselves. It's just not smart. We ought to have independent research. We need that kind of work to be done in this country at this time.
All right. We're going to take another break, and we'll come back with one more segment with Dr. Davis and take as many calls as we possibly can. Stay with us. All right. We don't have much time in this segment, so we'll try to get to as many calls. But Dr. Davis, you wanted to emphasize the studies being done on pregnant animals and how that might translate to pregnancy in human beings.
Absolutely. These researchers in Turkey and Greece and Australia have done studies looking at pregnant animals, exposing them just to an hour a day of cell phone radiation, and then they produce offspring that have fewer brain cells and more damage to their brains and their livers and their eyes. So this is saying that pregnancy is a very critical time. That is why all new smartphones today come with warnings that you can find on our website at ehtrust.org that say pregnant women should avoid keeping phones near their lower abdomen, as should teenagers. And so should young men who want to become fathers, because they run the risk of a reduced sperm count if they keep the phone in their pocket. Because even when phones are in your pocket, they're constantly sending signals back to the tower, and half of the signal from the phone gets into your brain or body, the way phones are designed today.
Well, Rob has a question at the Dollar Bank Instant Access Center that's sort of related to that. Have there been any studies on young adults who primarily use the text service on their phones versus actually talking on the phone, all in relation to location of potential cancer cells, midsection versus the head?
Really brilliant question, and the unfortunate answer is none that I know of. And again, that's something that Environmental Health Trust is very much hoping to support. That kind of study needs to be done. We are not doing any surveillance on cell phones and their health impacts, unlike drugs. If cell phones were drugs, they would be illegal because they've never been tested for safety, and we have no monitoring underway.
Wow. All right, let's go to Highland Park. Hill, you're on KDK with Dr. Davis.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having this guest. She's great. And good to see you at PNC Park on Saturday, too.
laying down almost on the couch.
Yeah, right. I was going to ask, the child, the GPS tracking devices for children, are they harmful at all? Or, if you know what I'm talking about, they're very small devices.
I do. Again, distance is your friend. And okay. So as long as the child is not holding the device right against their head or on their body, then okay. If you feel that you need such a device, that's fine. I really think as someone who has survived having teenagers and now has grandchildren, I have to question the value of those devices for young children, really. I think they play upon our fears, and we have to recognize that we have to create environments where we feel comfortable that our children are in good hands, whether with us or with others. And I think that these tracking devices play upon the fears that are generated after 9/11, that at any moment someone might snatch a child. And I think that's an unfortunate situation that we have so much fear in our society today.
So if it's in a backpack or something, that's even too close.
No. A backpack would be fine. A lunchbox would be fine. If you feel you need to use such a device, just make sure it's not on the body of the child.
And what happens if the kid takes the backpack off?
I mean, they have them that are in shoes also, but I'm sure that's too close to the body. That's in your
Well, I would think that they would be, and I really don't understand what the rationale is for such devices. Maybe somebody can explain it to me later on.
Sometimes you have, joint custody situations where the other parent isn't, frankly, very...
You're James Bond, huh? Hill, you're a spy.
All right.
Well, we understand your point. All right. Thank you, Hill. All right. Let's go to Jeff in West Mifflin. Jeff, go ahead. Jeff going once. Jeff going twice. All right. We lost you. We'll try Ken in the South Hills. Ken, go ahead.
Hello. I heard a guy named Paul Harvey say that you want to get the scare of your life, walk through a grocery store with a Geiger counter. Those barcodes that they scan give off a combination of rads of radiation. Page 2.
Wow. I've never heard that. I know nothing about it, and it seems improbable. The barcodes are meant for the images contain information. But I know that's news to me, and I frankly have some doubt about it.
All right, let's go to Peb in Mount Washington.
What's going on, Chris? What's going on, Doc?
Hey, Ted.
Hey, first of all, Doc, you got my sympathies and condolences for your partner. I think y'all guys are heroes. I think you way ahead of the curve. It's like trying to take lead out of paint.
Well, thank you very much, Ted. I mean, Dr. David Servan-Schreiber is a real hero to the world because he really took what his personal tragedy was with his first brain cancer diagnosis and turned it into a remarkable career of reaching out to so many people with his message that there are things you can do to prevent cancer, to live a healthier life. And anybody listening out there, sleep in the dark, because as Dr. Servan-Schreiber and I say, melatonin is what the body makes at night. Don't fall asleep with your TV on or your radio on.
Right.
If you sleep in the dark, your body will naturally make melatonin. Melatonin naturally repairs any damage that might have occurred because of your cell phone use. The same thing is true of drinking green tea. If you've had damage, if you're not doomed, it's not all gloom and doom, what you do is simply do the sensible things that David Servan-Schreiber and I talk about. Drink green tea, sleep in the dark, eat lots of broccoli, and frankly, don't worry. Because we live in a modern society, you can't live in a bubble, but you need to understand there are things you can do that are going to leave you and your family healthy.
All right, Ted, we're getting short on time. Did you have a question in there anywhere?
Oh, yeah, I got a couple of questions. One, what would be the impact of your study on the stock market? And the last one, what's the appropriate age for a young kid to have a cell phone? And what kind of cell phone?
All right.
Oh, boy.
All right, thanks, Ted. I got to let you go.
Easy question. As to the stock market, which I can't predict, I think that there's tremendous business opportunity here. There is an opportunity to design safer phones, and they are being designed. There are opportunities to design carrying devices, to design, for example, phones that are cordless phones that don't work 24/7, so they're not radiating you all the time, but only work when they need to work. They have them in Israel. They have them available as an EcoDect phone from Siemens. Why shouldn't all cordless phones work like that? So there's a lot of business opportunity here. A lot of money will be made by making the improvements that are needed here. Now, as to children, all I can tell you is this. They don't come, one size does not meet all. Different children have different needs, different circumstances. The English government has put on their website advice that children under the age of 16 should only use phones for emergency, should use them for texting, and with a headset only. The French have said there should be no phones given at all to children under the age of 12, and they should be used with limits to children under the age of 16.
All right. On that note, I'm going to ask you again, because we're real short, your website where people can go and learn more about what we've talked about in this hour.
ehtrust.org. And since most of your teenagers have cell phones, just please tell them, distance is your friend. Get that phone out of your pocket. Use a headset, use a speakerphone, and texting is fine so long as you don't keep the phone on your body. And more information can be found on our website, ehtrust.org. And thank you so much, Chris, for helping bring attention to what I think is one of the most important unrecognized global public health threats today.
Dr. Davis, we'll talk again. Thank you.